This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
What's up and welcome in. I'm Connor. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. We've got baseball today. The White Sox and Mariners wrap up the Cactus League schedule. We'll have the pregame show at 2:30, our first of the 2024 season. Len and DJ have the broadcast first pitch 3:10, and the postgame show will follow. So a lot of chances for your phone calls concerning White Sox baseball or MLB in general. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. And keep it in your phone for the postgame shows all season long. Have you ever dreamed of being in a White Sox ad? Well, now is your chance. Show your White Sox pride and share your favorite ballpark memories with us. For the opportunity to be in a commercial, digital ad, billboards, and more, they'll make you famous. Submit your photos or videos at whitesox.com/fan. Got a lot of news to get to here. There are still a lot of decisions to be made for the White Sox, even though we are getting closer and closer to opening day. Again, final game of the Cactus League for the White Sox today. They get the Mariners. Let's give you a little bit of information on the game itself today. Second to last game. They play the Rockies tomorrow afternoon for the final wrap-up, but it's our final broadcast here on the network of the Cactus League schedule. Here's what you need to know going into the ballgame today, and we may have a pretty newsy afternoon and pretty newsy post-game show, I would think, with just one game left on the schedule. The White Sox are 9-18 down there in Arizona, looking to finish with double-digit wins. Nick Nastrini, who we'll talk a lot about today, gets the start for the White Sox. Michael Kopech is scheduled to throw today. Tuki Toussaint is slated for two innings of work. Steven Wilson, the right-hander, the Sox got in the Dylan Cease deal, will pitch, and veteran Brian Shaw will handle some outs as well. Also of note, Drew Thorpe, the headliner, and the Sox return for Dylan Cease, will pitch in a minor league game today. Veteran Brad Keller, who's with the Sox on a minor league deal, will throw a bullpen session. For the Mariners, it's George Kirby, one of the better young pitchers in the American League. The M's have Luis Castillo starting opening day for them. They are just a stacked pitching rotation in Seattle. Probably one of, if not the best, top-to-bottom pitching staffs in baseball. They've got to get some offense together, stop striking out as much as they did last season to get themselves back to the playoffs, but it's a fun young team. Get to the lineups for both teams in just a little bit. They're out, and it's looking fairly opening day-ish with some questions around it. But we've got to sort out this roster a little bit. There's been some moves made over the last couple of days, so we'll get you updated with some of the latest roster moves. Here's what you need to know. Just this afternoon, right-hander and veteran Jesse Chavez was released. He's nearing 40 years old, said that he wanted 2024 to be his final season before moving on to coaching. I would expect, given that Chavez pitched really well for three different seasons, or each of the last three seasons coming up to this year, that he hooks on with a team and gets a chance to pitch in the majors, could even be the White Sox at some point. You know how these things work in spring training. Late cuts often end into additions at AAA or whatever. I don't know that Chavez would be super interested in AAA work. However, also last night, the Sox cut veterans Mike Moustakas and Kevin Pillar, which is pretty surprising, at least from my perspective. I had figured Moustakas to be, and a lot of others had, in a battle for the lefty bench bats with Gavin Sheets, and spring had not gone well for Moustakas. Still, veteran guy, known to a lot of players on this team, well known to this front office. White Sox general manager Chris Getz played alongside Moustakas, albeit early on in Moose's career, and later on in Getz's career with the Royals. But you figured Gavin had the upper advantage with how he'd been playing in spring. But Kevin Pillar getting cut is really surprising. This was just yesterday. Last night, in fact, probably at 7 o'clock or so, I had basically written in, not in Sharpie, but in everything but, that Kevin Pillar and Dominic Fletcher were going to be the opening day platoon in right field for the White Sox. Kind of a, you know, lefty righty sort of, you know, that's how you handle this kind of thing. Pilar, though, getting cut means we've got options here. Also yesterday, the White Sox signed Robbie Grossman to a minor league deal. I'll get you Robbie Grossman's numbers in just a second here, but you're probably aware of him. He played for the Tigers for a little while. He's a guy that spent some time in the AL Central and has put up some decent decent offensive seasons in the last couple. Kind of a league average bat, an okay outfielder, a guy that's very patient at the plate and will see pitches. That on base percentage of his is absolutely the calling card. A career 346 on base, and in 2023, with 115 games played for the Texas Rangers, where he really came alive late in that season and got that offense moving some, made some impressions in the postseason as well, getting some starts in a few games. Last season, a 100 OPS plus split across Detroit and Atlanta. Oh, pardon, that's 2022. 2023, a 100 OPS plus for Texas. He had 10 home runs. He had 49 driven in with a 340 on base, batting .238. He's a career .244 hitter. Robbie Grossman is also a switch hitter. So that means, at least from my perspective, I don't think you add a veteran outfielder with the kind of track record that Robbie Grossman has. I'm not saying he's, you know, the end-all be-all of left or right field, but certainly an established veteran who knows how to handle himself at the plate and can deal with either corner outfield spot, primarily a left fielder in his past. But you figure a guy could switch over to right field a little bit too. Played with Houston, Minnesota, Oakland, Detroit, Atlanta, and Texas over his 13-year big league career. And the question here for the 34-year-old Grossman isn't so much, are we going to see him in the majors, at least from my perspective. It's, can he be ready by opening day? Grossman was not in a major league camp when the White Sox signed him. So it's essentially a you know, it's not an off-the-couch kind of thing. These guys stay in shape all year round. But you are bringing in a guy who has not faced competitive pitching in a while. It doesn't take hitters quite as long to get themselves into a rhythm as it does pitchers, you know, the ramp-up portion of it. But seeing live-action stuff can take you a while to kind of find that rhythm and find that vibe at the plate. So it really becomes a question of how quickly the White Sox are willing to push Robbie Grossman and whether or not they're able to clear a 40-man spot for him going into opening day, as to whether or not he's on the roster and platooning with Dominic Fletcher. At least that's how you expect it to be. Some more moves too. Yesterday morning, Prelander Baroa, the righty fire thrower the Sox got back from Seattle in the deal for Gregory Santos, was optioned to AAA Charlotte. And earlier this week, catcher Corey Lee was optioned to AAA. Right-handers Joe Barlow and Corey Knebel were sent to minor league camp as well. It's kind of been a flurry of activity, and still there are a lot of bodies in White Sox camp. I'm looking at the press release that announced to us that Jesse Chavez was released from the team, and it says that with the move, the White Sox have 42 players remaining in camp, 23 of them pitchers, 3 catchers, 7 infielders, and 9, count them, 9 outfielders. So later on in the show, we're going to go through the roster a little bit. Jack McGrath is our producer, and he doesn't know this yet, but we're going to kind of hash out the opening day roster, the opening 26. We got some options. I made a list. We're going to work through the list. I've got some 40-man questions. And, of course, I want to hear from you. You got preferences on who lands these last couple of spots? You want a starter bumped off his spot because of the solid production of a guy like, I don't know, Gavin Sheets here in spring? I want to hear about it. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. Later on in the show, just before we say goodbye and get ourselves ready for the start of the pregame show at 2:30, we're going to talk with Darren Jackson, White Sox analyst. You're going to hear Len and DJ later on today as the White Sox take on the Mariners. We'll ask the big questions of camp to DJ. We'll talk about Andrew Vaughn and what this year should be like for a guy who's carried Andrew Vaughn's pedigree through the last couple of years with the White Sox, the battles he's seen out in right field with Dominic Fletcher, the stuff we've seen from Garrett Crochet now being named opening day starter, all that good stuff. But I guess, you know, more than anything else, worth talking in this show about maybe the biggest headline here over the last week. We didn't get a chance to talk about this last week because the announcement hadn't been made, but Garrett Crochet is your opening day starter. That kind of knocked my socks off. I was pretty surprised by it. And I don't know that a lot of people expected that to be the case. I think you had to be pretty close to, if not very well inside, Pedro Grifol's inner circle to have a feeling that Garrett Crochet was going to get the opening day nod. Shoot, last week we were kind of going through the depth chart and going through that starting rotation a little bit, and I had Garrett Crochet in tier two of my most likely White Sox starting pitchers in the starting five come opening day. And that's mostly because of the workload that Garrett has, quite frankly, not been able to accumulate in the bigs, whether it be from Tommy John or the shoulder injuries last year, just being a bullpen guy and really having that entire transition from college ball to pro ball, a lot of it being eaten up by COVID in 2020. Crochet's just not a guy that's had the ability or luck, in the case of COVID, to pile on a lot of innings and show you what he's able to do with 100, 120, 140. Shoot, he's only pitched 70-some professional innings at this point, obviously most of it being out of the bullpen. I think with giving Crochet the nod and kind of working an unconventional opening rotation with some of the off days the White Sox have to start the year, you know, you've got the opener the 28th against Detroit, the off day on 29th, Friday. You're no stranger to it, but most teams who open in cold weather areas build in that off day first in that opening series, just in case you get some weird weather or something like that. It's been a minute since I've checked the forecast, but I think opening day looks like it should be a pretty decent day here in town. 55 degrees, according to my phone, 60 degrees on Friday. That's the off day, 56, 52 over the weekend. That's some pretty decent weather for an opening day. So my recommendation to you would be to get yourself down to 35th and Shields, get some tickets, and come see the White Sox take on the Tigers or the Braves in that first opening week of play. The Braves are in town to face the White Sox on the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of April. Two-day games and a night game sandwiched right in the middle. Still with the off days that kind of move around there. We've got an off day after opening day and then another off day coming up on the 11th after a three-game set with the Braves, a four-game set with the Royals, and then three more with the Cleveland Guardians. The White Sox don't necessarily need a fifth starter. However, they are going to have to play a little bit creative with the opening day rotation because of their, I guess, just kind of playing it conservatively with Garrett Crochet and wanting him to get the rest he needs in order to take whatever workload he's able to take in the first two, three, 4 months of the season. I think the experiment, the, you know, kind of shifting things into gear for Garrett Crochet starter is a cool thing for the White Sox. This is a guy they drafted first round, made instant impact in that White Sox run in 2020. No, things didn't end well there with the injury to Crochet and everything like that. But you saw the stuff. You see the competitive nature that Crochet's got. This front office and the prior regime had talked often about Crochet getting a chance to become a starter, but because of the expectations that were around this team over the last few years, his best way to help a winner was to be out of the bullpen. That left the option out of the pen. Now, with that very much changing, the focus very much changing, looking toward growth, you are going to be able to, as a White Sox rotation, hand him as many starts as he can handle. I think it will come with some growing pains. That's to be expected. I hope that it does not come, obviously, with any significant injury to Crochet or anybody else who has to take up the slack. You hope against hope that that's going to be an issue here, of course. But as always, we talk about pitching depth being much more than the five guys in the rotation and the eight or nine guys in the bullpen, depending on how you open the season. It's a lot more than that. And I think what Chris Getz has felt pretty good about this year is his ability to assemble some depth in the starting rotation that's going to reach down into AAA Charlotte and allow them to bring up, if they need them, some arms that understand what it's like to compete at an MLB level. We'll get into the rest of the White Sox roster decisions because they're going to be made here in the next 24, 48, 72 hours. And we're going to have a set 26-man roster that will head north to Chicago to take on the Tigers on Thursday the 28th for opening day. That's the big news. We got a ball game coming up a little bit later. Pregame show at 2:30, 3 o'clock. Len and DJ with the broadcast of the White Sox and Mariners. And it's all right here on ESPN 1000.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Guaranteed Rate Field for opening day on March 28th. Sox take on the Tigers at 3:10 p.m. All fans in attendance will receive a clear tote bag presented by BMO. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Jack McGrath is our producer. Hi, Jack. How you doing, my man?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. I'll make an admission here. I'll come clean with something I felt stupid about earlier. You know, vulnerability is a big part of being a radio host, so I'm told. So the giveaway on the 28th for the White Sox is a clear tote bag presented by BMO, right? It took me 3 weeks of White Sox Weekly shows to understand why a clear tote bag was an awesome giveaway on opening day. I'm betting you can figure this out a lot faster than I did. You got it?
Get it through security.
That's right, my friend. It took me, Jack, no kidding, it took me 3 weeks to go. I'm like, well, I'm sure it's a very nice tote bag. I bet it has the White Sox logo on it. I'm sure it's sturdy and can fit all kinds of things in there.
Makes sense, though. With your fancy press pass and stuff, do you have to go through security?
No, sir, I don't. I don't. I go through the press pass. I see Chris or Jack or Phil right there at the entrance. I hand them my backpack, and they say, it's nice to see you. And then I walk upstairs, and I get to work. You're right. I haven't had to think about the clear tote bag. But if you're going to the ball game on opening day and you're in attendance, you'll get a clear tote bag presented by BMO, which means that you've got your clear tote bag for the rest of the season. They will give it to you. So then you can bring all the kinds of stuff that you're allowed to bring into the ballpark in a clear tote bag the way you're supposed to. All right, let's get through this roster a little bit. Jack, I want to start on the position player side. We have, as a White Sox Weekly team here, gone through and projected some starters. Some of these positions, not that difficult to project in terms of starters, but we're working through the opening day 26 as best as we can and trying to do it as close to how we think Pedro Grifol is going to do things. So our starting outfield looks pretty simply like this. Jack, our names.
Andrew Benintendi, Luis Robert Jr., Dominic Fletcher.
That seems right to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think if Dominic Fletcher isn't your opening day right fielder, it's because Scooble's pitching for the Tigers, and that's a lefty-lefty matchup, and it'll be, well, we'll get to that in a little bit, you know, somebody else taking those at-bats. But I really do think that despite his offensive struggles in camp so far, Fletcher is a guy the White Sox went out to get. They identified him. He's 26. He's ready to go. Like, he has marinated long enough.
And
right?
He hit well in big league ball last year, too. That's the other point.
No joke about it, man. You're absolutely right. For the Diamondbacks last year, Fletcher had a month. Are we just going to – can we call him Fletch? Can we make a decision on that?
It'd be much easier. Yeah.
Fletch had a real good run in Arizona to the point where Diamondbacks fans, after they sent him down after a tough road stretch, Alec Thomas, I think, had gotten healthy. They were like, where's Fletch? We want Fletch back. I don't know that they said exactly that. I think they probably said, we want to jump in the pool out there in center field. It's a fun time. But Dominic Fletcher, I think, is probably that guy. Your starting infield looks like what, Jack?
Andrew Vaughn, Nicky Lopez, Paul DeJong, and Yoan Moncada.
I don't think there's a lot of room for movement here. I don't know if you do. I think, and we'll get to this when we get to the bench, but Braden Shoemake is one of the guys that the White Sox brought in the Aaron Bummer Braves trade, one of the five players there. So is Nicky Lopez, for that matter. I think Lopez is here to start. I think he's a great glove. I think you see if he can hit you close to that 300 level, get some batted balls in play, luck, and get him back to that offensive profile that we seen with the Royals a few years ago. If that's not there, I think there are a lot of ways that that infield could kind of turn here over the next few months. But I would expect Lopez, because he kind of checks the boxes of what Pedro Grifol has been preaching here in camp. He hustles. He plays great defense. He makes good decisions. He handles his at-bats well, even if he doesn't hit the ball all that hard. He's not swinging outside the strike zone all that often. He's very contact-oriented. I think he's your opening day second baseman. That's really the only question I have here about your starting four infielders.
He's had a really good spring, too.
Yeah.
He's hot right now, and might as well put him in the lineup if he's doing everything else well.
That Nicky Lopez, so hot right now. Your DH is Eloy Jimenez. I mean, that's set in stone, and we're good to go there. Your catchers, Martin Maldonado and Max Stassi, that's set as well. And there's a conversation to be had about Maldonado and Stassi. And the boys over at Sox Machine were doing a real – Jim and Josh were having a good conversation, James too, about these two catchers that grabbed my attention a little bit. I had kind of forgotten just how solid Max Stassi has been in his big league career. Obviously, the premature birth of his children over the last year is why he sat out. Some health complications there, and my God, do you feel for a family that has to work through that? And hats off to Max for understanding and knowing and making the decision to go take care of those things first and foremost. That is just such a gutsy thing to go do when you're a pro ball player. But Stassi's back, theoretically healthy from the hip injury that he'd had a year back or so. And if he's... Listen, the defense for Max Stassi had been really good prior to that hip, to the point where, although Martin Maldonado is your appointed veteran with a long-term deal and all this other kind of stuff, it's never been the bat that's been the calling card for Maldonado. Easy for me to say. But I wonder exactly how that's going to balance out as you try and shepherd some of these young pitchers, a lot of these young pitchers along. So that leaves us some bench spots, right? Figure three of them. What do we have for the bench right now, Jack?
So we've got a few options. Braden Shumake, Gavin Sheets, Brett Phillips, Robbie Grossman, Zach Remillard, and Danny Mendick are your options.
Those are the options as I see them. And a note here, too. Remember, the 40-man roster for the White Sox is full right now. But there are two players listed on the 40-man that could. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm speculating, and I don't like to speculate about health. It's pertinent to this part of the conversation because we're talking about roster spots, and this is the ugly business of it. There are two guys that are hurt, Jimmy Lambert and Shade Drohan, who could be put on the 60-day IL. Guys on the 60-day IL don't count against the 40 on your 40-man. So if you're GMing this kind of in the background with us, you can open up two 40-man spots if Lambert or Drohan, or Drohan, I guess, go to the 60-day IL, which I would not be too surprised with. That means that a guy like Brett Phillips or Robbie Grossman or Zach Remillard or Danny Mendick, who are not on the 40-man, can be added to that, then to the active roster, without dropping someone off the 40 and exposing them to waivers. Shumake was supposed to be hurt for a lot longer and has gotten himself back into action. He's in the lineup today. Gavin Sheets has, quite frankly, just played some of his best baseball here in the Cactus League. Offensively, he's been terrific. And with the release of Kevin Pillar, that puts us in a brand new world for some of the movement here with the backup outfielder spot, with that fourth outfielder spot. I'm very much looking forward to see how that depth chart shakes out, and I'm really hoping that we've got an announcement for the postgame show because it'd be fun to talk about. We'll get to the starting pitchers and the bullpen when we come back. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. You got thoughts on the White Sox roster as we get closer to opening day. Feel free to drop us a line. And if you've ever dreamed of being in a White Sox ad, now is your chance. Show your White Sox pride and share your favorite ballpark memories with us for the opportunity to be featured in a commercial, digital ad, billboards, and more. Submit your photos or videos at whitesox.com/fan. More White Sox Weekly when we come back on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. We got White Sox baseball coming at you a little bit later this afternoon. It's a 3:10 start for the White Sox and Mariners. Len and DJ coming up at 3. Pre-game show at 2:30. Darren Jackson's going to join us in just a few minutes here to close out the show. But Sox fans, you can head to the ballpark on Saturday, March 30th, as the White Sox take on the Tigers at 1:10 p.m. First 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a White Sox hoodie presented by Guaranteed Rate. To purchase tickets, visit WhiteSox.com/promos. Trying to tie up the 26-man roster as best we can here. We'll do the pitchers here real quickly. We got to DJ is going to call in just a little bit, so hold up. Garrett Crochet, Michael Soroka, Eric Fetty, Chris Flexen, and I think Nick Nastrini is going to make this opening day rotation. I don't know how often he's going to pitch in the first 2 weeks, given the off days and the scheduling that we talked about earlier, but I think Nick Nastrini, who's put up a great Cactus League run here, has definitely put his mark down, earned his spot. I still wonder how many strikes he's going to throw. He's a rookie, after all. Would love to see him grow into a solid rotation member for the White Sox here. Oh, and I know what you're thinking. Nastrini's not on the 40-man. How are they going to make the room? I was reminded by James Fox, who does great work at Future Sox Online, that Davis Martin, who's rehabbing from Tommy John last year and doing well with the rehab, but because he's still rehabbing, Martin could be thrown on the 60-day IL as well. That's a pretty common thing to do with a guy rehabbing from Tommy John who figures to throw a little bit later on the year. Throw him on the 60, clear yourself a spot. So that's three players that could move to the 60-day IL and open up some spots for these guys who aren't on the 40. Bullpen-wise, we know Michael Kopech and John Brebbia and Tim Hill and Steven Wilson are going to be in the bullpen for the White Sox. We know those things to be true. Hill's a lefty. You want another lefty? I think Tanner Banks. He's pitched really well in spring. He's done this before for you. There's your two lefties, Hill and Banks. You're going to hear it from DJ in just a little bit, but Dominic Leon has looked really good and opened some eyes, including the two eyes that belong to our friend Darren Jackson. Jordan Leisure has owned in, like, I'm sorry, like, that's closer stuff. That's the fastball and slider that closers have. I would be more than thrilled to see that rookie take some high leverage options or opportunities for the White Sox this year, maybe close out some games. Davey Garcia is interesting. Tuki Toussaint pitches today. We'll see. There's some other guys not on the 40 that could be added, perhaps even into the rotation if I'm wrong about Nastrini, but I don't think I am at this point. I'm still just guessing, but I'm pretty solid about Nick Nastrini making that opening day starting rotation. We're going to talk to Darren Jackson in just a couple of minutes. And at 2:30, we've got the first White Sox pregame show of 2024. White Sox Weekly back in a couple on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight, and now joined by White Sox radio analyst and your favorite human being, Darren Jackson. DJ, great to talk with you. We're closer and closer to opening day. Not much time left and still some decisions for the White Sox roster, but great to talk to you as always, my man.
Yeah, I've missed our conversations, and I'm looking forward to getting this season underway, Connor, and spending as much time with you as I can, pre, post, in game, you name it. It's going to be an exciting year because, as you said, a lot of the decisions to still be made, but exciting decisions, and I can't wait to see what the final 26-man roster is going to look like.
Yeah, it seems like we know a little bit more about the starting pitching situation than maybe anywhere else, bullpen-wise and even some of the last few roster spots. I want to ask you about the two big decisions that got made here over the last 8 to 10 days. Obviously, that's dealing Dylan Cease to the San Diego Padres and naming Garrett Crochet as the opening day starter. Obviously, it changes a lot for Pedro Grifol and Chris Getz. What have been your initial impressions about the depth that the White Sox have assembled starting pitching-wise now, and how has Garrett looked to you here in the last couple outings?
Well, you know, his last outing, he was a little obviously shaky, but that doesn't matter. I actually was saying to myself, good, thank goodness he got that out of the way, trying to be perfect through spring training and carry that into the season. No, it gives you something to adjust from, so he was outstanding. We saw him throw a couple of few times this spring in person. So I thought the opportunity for him to be the opening day guy was excellent. I'm like, hey, look, you're former first rounder. You've lost Dylan Cease. He's no longer in the mix. So why not? everybody's name's got to be thrown in the hat. Who's going to open it? Garrett has looked like the most dominant pitcher the White Sox have had all spring training. Throw him out there. He's never going to forget this opportunity. He looks the part to me. He looks like he's a number one in a rotation. His fastball's been explosive. His off-speed stuff's been there. He's commanded everything. The difference is, obviously, being named that opening day starter and feeling the pressure for that. No matter who you are, I mean, maybe Mark Burley, but not many guys can handle the fact that they're making their first opening day opening start as a starter. So for me, I look at it and go, if he gets past the nerves early, he'll be just fine.
Yeah, if he's headed for a Fernando Valenzuela career, that would be absolutely fine by us, right? Fernando made his first career start on opening day, and things worked out pretty well.
No doubt. You know, that's an interesting comparison. But I will say this, because I know the Fernando, that his first big league start is just a kid out of Mexico, and I was in L.A. watching him pitch those games back in the day. But what a different type of pitcher with Fernando. Cunning and guile, screwball, big breaking ball. But a lot of people don't realize, and I faced Fernando, he threw harder than people thought. He was popping the ball up there about 93, 94 miles an hour when he let it go. And he threw about a freaking 78 mile an hour screwball. And good luck to those that were trying to hit both of those pitches back to back.
Well, you talk about velo. We've seen Garrett pop 100 both as a reliever and here in spring. Now the guns down in Arizona are going to read a little bit different than I think in regular season. But, you know, in-game stamina and then in-between start stamina is going to be a question for anybody their first time in a starting rotation in the bigs. How do you expect Pedro and Ethan Katz and Brian Bannister and the rest of the White Sox pitching infrastructure to kind of manage that first full year in a starting rotation for him?
Well, I mean, if you were to ask Garrett, I guarantee he's going to say, just let me go. And my body and everything will show you what I'm capable of doing. And don't limit me to innings, because I never like that anyway. And most conditioning people don't want to just limit somebody. But he's built differently. He's a massive guy, right? So who knows? He can go out and be efficient with his pitch count, give you five or six innings every time he goes out there, but maybe throw 85 pitches. So he could give you 180 innings instead of looking at it like, well, hey, we don't want to push this guy past 120 innings this year, because we don't want one of those things to happen again. We don't need a guy getting to the big leagues and all of a sudden the postseason's coming around and you go, hey, we surprised the whole world. We're going into the postseason, but we already used this guy's innings up. What was that, Strasburg, that had that happen with the Nationals? And we don't need something like that happening again. I think you just look at the build of the character and you look at him and you say, no, this guy, he can handle this. He can keep going. I hate thinking of watching a guy and making an assessment, even though he's coming back from the Tommy John and all that stuff. I think you look at him and you say, no, let's just watch what he's doing and let his body tell us how far he can go.
What's going to be the focus, you think, for Michael Kopech now that he's a member of that bullpen? How does he have the most successful year he can with a new position? Well, not a brand new position for him, but with kind of a new direction for him with the White Sox.
I think, honestly, it alleviates a lot of pressure from Michael. As much as he wants to be the guy in the rotation because he's capable of it, I think it takes that pressure off of him being Michael Kopech, the big superstar that threw 105 miles an hour when he was with the Red Sox in the minor leagues, and then he joined the White Sox. He does go out there now as a reliever and just let it go. Here's 100. Hit it if you can. Here's 98. Here's 97. When he's starting, you can see the difference. He is pacing himself. He is not thinking he's working one or two innings. He's thinking he's working five, six innings. I like him in this role. I think he's going to excel in it. We've already seen him do it in the past, be successful as a long reliever. And you work your way back into the starting rotation by being successful in that role. So as long as he is out there doing his job in whatever role is asked with the pressure off of him, he's got the potential to go right back in that rotation and be a star.
Is there another bullpen arm or two that's made you kind of raise an eyebrow a little bit? I remember last spring I was down in Arizona with you, and we had watched Gregory Santos throw a game, and you and I did the game afterward. We couldn't help but talk about how good Santos looked, and obviously the season played out the way it did for him. White Sox have had to deal with some injuries to probable bullpen guys like John Brebbia and Jimmy Lambert and some others too, but a name or two that kind of made you go, oh, all right, that's interesting. Didn't know he had that in him.
Yeah. I've seen Dominic Leon throw quite a few times, and he has looked great to me. I mean, I like what I see from him. I'm like, whoa, this guy's legit. I mean, I know he's been in the bigs. He's been successful. But I love the way he pitches. I love his stuff. I'm like, this guy, I like him being part of that bullpen. And same thing, Jordan Leisure. Jordan Leisure, to me, you're looking at this guy going, whoa, okay. I've heard how his potential is there, but watching him pitch, I think he's the other surprise guy that you look at and go, I like that, and he's got a real good chance to help your bullpen or eventually starting staff. I don't care, but he's got the stuff. Both those guys, to me, have surprised this spring just because I hadn't seen them work enough to know what they were capable of doing.
There's, on the position player side, one name that I think a lot of White Sox fans will be keyed into the first month, 2 months, and that's Dominic Fletcher. He seems poised to be, if not the opening day right fielder, then certainly the young kid that's going to get as many at-bats as Pedro Grifol can get him in the early going. Your initial thoughts on Fletcher, on his abilities both at the plate and defensively? Have you gotten a chance to sit down with the young man? I know you like to run the outfielders through their paces a little bit.
Connor, I've not had the chance to sit there and mess with Dominic yet. All I did was see him introduce myself and say hello, and that's it to this point. With a locker room full of 100 guys, it's hard to corner anybody right now, to be honest with you. But I've loved what I've seen of him in the outfield. Good path to the ball, good strong arm, good reads off of the bat, all those things. Offensively, he struggled this spring. That doesn't mean anything. You check his career stats, they're outstanding. I believe 295 career minor league hitter with a high on-base percentage, high OPS. So those numbers tell you he can hit. Even his little bit of time in the big leagues, he's been successful as an offensive player. So I think we throw out the offensive stats. He struck out a lot this spring. Okay, compared to, I mean, he's got like 7-8 hits compared to like 19 strikeouts. So, okay, it's not a great offensive spring. He's got extra pressure on him to actually be the man out there in the outfield this spring. So we kind of erase that. And everybody always asks me, do spring training stats matter? They do. You don't want to suck. You want to be great. You want to stand out. And they matter. But at the same time, they're not the whole gauge and judgment that a coach and staff's going off of. They look at your movements. They see your swing, your path to the ball, all these things. They go, he'll be fine. It's just spring training. So I think he'll be fine. But he's just got to get past the pressure of being the starting guy if he's in that position. But look, let's not overlook Gavin Sheets. He's still here. Gavin Sheets has got big league experience. Gavin Sheets offensively wasn't doing the things he thinks he should have last year. He said he feels great right now. I kind of look at Gavin still in the mix of this too. You can't just give anybody a job. I think Gavin still deserves the opportunity to prove that, hey, I'm here. I'm on this team, and I want to be a star out there in right field. He's adequate enough out there. I know we're trying to improve overall defensively, but Gavin's taught himself how to play the outfield. So I don't dismiss that. You got Kevin Pillar in the mix. You got Ortega in the mix as other outfielders. So I don't know. Those are those roster spots you were talking about a few minutes ago, that those decisions that still need to be made. And I'm sitting here just like anybody else going, what's the final decision going to be? I don't actually think right at this particular second the roster's set in Pedro Grifol's mind. He's still trying to figure this out and see who jumps out the last couple of days.
Chris Getz and Pedro Grifol both talked extensively heading into this spring training about wanting to create a better fundamental White Sox roster, a team that quite frankly played defense way better than it has the last couple of years. It's something you've talked about quite a bit on our broadcasts, on pre and post game shows, on White Sox weeklies. Have they check the box for you? Is this a better looking and more capable defensive team than the White Sox had last season?
Oh yeah, you know that. And I liked reading whatever the preseason predictions were from some magazine that said they went from 29th statistically last year. That's official. We know that, to prediction of being maybe the 7th best ranked defense in baseball. That's my kind of stuff right there. I want to see that this team can catch the ball once the pitching staff lets it out of their hand, catch the ball, You know, you've sat there with me. We've discussed it. I talk about, hey, to me, build yourself an all gold glove team. And if they can hit, good for them. But in the end, you need to catch the baseball. You can't give opponents extra outs. You can't make your pitching staff feel like, do I have to strike everybody out? These guys can't catch it, can't throw it, don't know where to throw it when they do catch it. I think we've eliminated that. We now have an intelligent baseball team that knows what they're supposed to do, when it's supposed to happen. Make those tough decisions before the ball's hit to you. Don't say, oh, I've got the ball. Oh, geez, should I throw it there? No, all of this has to happen before the ball's hit to you. And I think we've got the guys in place now that think that way. They know long before the ball's hit to them defensively what they're going to do with it once they have it in their glove or in their hand. And that's going to be a lot of fun for you, for me, for the fans to watch this year. You know, we've talked about it, you and I, Connor, many a time during our broadcast, you and me, how when the ball's hit to a defender, we should be able to put our head down in our scorebook and start writing out. We haven't been doing that the last couple few years. We've kind of waited with our eyes wide open and waiting for the completion of the play. I don't think we have to do that this year, and I think that puts everybody at ease, and I think our fans are going to love some of the highlight reel plays these defensive players can make as well.
That'll be a real good thing for the, like you said, that pitching staff as well, who a lot of them are looking to find their, you know, establish a reputation in the big leagues. One more for you here, DJ. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the different position players that have been with this team and need to stay healthy, like Eloy or Yoan Moncada, or need to play better defense, like Tim Anderson over the last couple of years. He's now with Miami, of course. But I look at Andrew Vaughn, a top three draft pick, a guy at first base who you're looking to make that next step, and thinking, well, if there's a guy that can really kind of change the way this team looks offensively, it's Andrew Vaughn stepping into his own and being the best version of Andrew Vaughn. We've seen him for a little while now. Is there a better sense that you have of what the best Andrew Vaughn at the big league level looks like in 2024?
Yeah, I think last year was a solid year for him. First chance to be the first baseman of the White Sox. No more stress over trying to play outfield and be out of position. So I think you look at the growth offensively, the consistency. Yeah, he had some ups and downs offensively last year, but I think he knows what he's capable of doing. When it comes to Andrew, I'm a big fan. I think he's capable of being that 90 plus runs batted in per year, keep getting better and better. 25 to 30 home runs. He picks his moments for those. He focuses on being a good hitter, number one. I think Andrew also is a guy that wants to keep showing people that they better not take him for granted. He's just going to keep working so hard that he's going to keep getting better and more consistent and keep growing as an offensive player. Defensively, I mean, his quickness, he's trying to improve upon, so he's going to have first step quickness, trying to get to the ball to his right. He knows how to play the position much better. He's that guy, I know you can plug him in the heart of the lineup, and he should be fine. Now, you know, you and I have discussed this, and there's been a lot of stuff talked about RBI guys. Does it really matter? Yeah, Andrew needs to be that guy when he walks up to home plate. The pressure's on the pitcher, not on him. And the best RBI guys I've ever been around as a player or watched, they knew how to do that. Whereas the guys that were incapable of really driving in 100 runs a year, they drove in 40, 50 because they just wanted to get the at bat over as quick as possible, and hopefully they did some damage when they were up there. Andrew needs to have that turn for him to where he's not an 80 RBI guy. He needs to be that 100 RBI guy by just going up there and realizing, as Marcus Thames will tell you, get your pitch, swing at strikes. If he does that in RBI situations, Andrew accepts base hits. He'll say, I'll hit that in the right center field and drive in two runs because they're in scoring position, rather than saying, I need to hit a home run. He's a smart hitter with a smart approach, and now he just needs to execute it in as many opportunities as possible. And I think this year, I don't know, Connor, this might be the year where he has back-to-back years and he gets better and better and better. I don't think he's a guy that settles for just being mediocre. I think he wants to be a guy that's, as you pointed out, a number three pick in the draft and is a star in the major leagues.
DJ, appreciate it as always. Looking forward to seeing you at Guaranteed Rate Field come March 28th, but you and Len have the broadcast for the White Sox and Mariners coming up here in just a little bit. We'll see you soon, Deej.
All right, Hunter, thank you for the time, my friend. I can't wait to see you.
We'll have the pregame show, our very first of 2024, at 2:30 with a 3:05 start for the White Sox and Mariners. Don't go anywhere. White Sox baseball is coming at you this afternoon on ESPN 1000.